Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to The School for Dumb Women, the podcast where we investigate the things you're too proud to admit you know nothing about. This episode is recorded remotely due to a global crisis. We will try our best not to mention too much. I'm your host woman, won't invite you to her secret bunker, Hannah Varrell. With me is anxious pooer, Alexandra Haddo.
I was bulk buying toilet roll before it was cool, Hannah.
And constantly mutating, Caroline O'Donoghue.
I've gone from my dog is a pain to hire my dog for £40 an hour in just 2 days. Honestly, my wages are great.
Today we're going to be talking about how Pantone gets to decide what colours are, why Mel Gibson has such a bad Scottish accent, and candy desks, which I still don't understand what they are. Let's go!
Oh, you're gonna, Hannah, you're gonna.
What the hell?
It's a wild ride.
Are you eating candy desks in the apocalypse?
Should we just crack on with candy desks while we're here? Yeah. While we're all suitably, massively fucking confused. Let's get on with candy desks.
Please.
So, you guys have been alive in the last few weeks, am I right?
I think so. Yeah, I believe so, yes.
We've all been noticing, you know, what a beautiful spring we're having.
We genuinely are, which is annoying.
You know, all that. And during all of this beautiful spring, I've noticed how much more my dependency for psychological sort of soothing has to come now from nightly broadcasts from politicians, which is a bad call, right? So, look, I'm fucking I'm tuning in every evening at 6:30 or 8:30 for Boris's unexplained midnight shift last night.
There is late night announcement.
Boris at night. His desk is much higher up now. Total aside, have you noticed that, like, when he's at his podium at night, his hair is a bit flattened down?
Is
like,
it?
They've wetted his hair down, like when Hugh Hefner used to host his parties in the 60s, just like swatting around.
You know it's getting serious when he's got a short back and sides.
So, like, I'm always one of those people who, like, I would much rather be a worthless peon who is safe and is like, the people in charge know what they're doing, rather than be one of those people who's like, blah, blah, blah. You know, the stats show that politicians are fucking us all over. As soon as this kind of pandemic began.
Oh my God, we used to talk about this, Caroline, and now it's happening.
Did we?
How we would just sit back and be like, yeah, whatever, I'll do whatever it takes.
Basically, what I'm saying is I've been blindly following the Prime Minister and listening to it like a tiny, tiny anxious dog. What doesn't help is finding out how disgustingly human they are.
Oh, absolutely,
It's not good. I would rather them not be. I would rather them just be like cool, shiny, authoritative daddies who just are going to take me to the zoo, buy me peanuts, and then get me home.
Yeah.
You know?
I remember when I first entered the workforce and realized that people who have jobs still are not good at them.
Oh my!
Hannah, there's no need to drag me on our own podcast.
Oh my god!
It like changed my whole view of society because I was like, oh, well, surely if you get a job in a thing, then you're going to be good at that thing, and like, absolutely not. Sorry, Alex.
It's fine.
Sorry, Alex.
It's absolutely fine.
One of these moments in finding out how disgustingly, horribly, like, corporeal these people are was I was scrolling through Twitter today, the anxiety hole, as you all know it.
Ah, yes.
I came across this tweet from at Miles Klee.
Sure.
And the tweet says, another senator has tested positive for COVID-19. Just hours ago, they were eating from the big trough of jelly beans that feeds the entire Congress. And I was like, that's an hilarious tweet.
What? The big trough of jelly beans.
The big trough of jelly beans that feeds the entire Congress. Imagine my shock and disgrace when I found out that this tweet was not a joke, but a fact.
I mean,
there is a big trough of jelly beans that feeds the entire Congress in America. Would you like to know more about it?
Yes, I would.
Yes, please.
Right, lads. Okay, so, you know, we're all vaguely familiar with the Senate. We've seen it on TV. It's that big semicircular room where...
Oh, I hate that show, yeah. But yeah.
Rubbish.
Yeah.
Absolutely boring. Rubbish TV show. And, like, I know we've sort of been programmed over the last... our entire lives to see the American presidency as kind of a joke. But, you know, when you see the Senate, you're at least like, that's the serious room.
Yeah, that's where
shit
are.
Gets going. Mm-hmm.
That's where somebody has a clue, surely.
Somebody has a clue. Well, since 1968, there has been a candy desk in the American Senate.
Right.
Which began when this Pennsylvanian senator called... George Murphy, who for some reason, and we talk about like celebrities like getting into office, like fucking Trump or Arnold Schwarzenegger. This guy, George Murphy, was just this camp Broadway dancer who had become a Republican senator halfway through his career. And like sure. he had a sweet tooth. So he just started filling his desk with candy. Right?
Right.
Just hard wrapped candies.
Got it. I'm with you.
Got it. At some point in 1968, George Murphy's desk was swapped or whatever. I guess they came back from term and they all moved desks. And he was now near like one of the exits. So people saw him with the candy in his drawer and was like, give us your sweets, Murphy.
What the Christ?
And so he started just fucking filling up his desk with like loose, hard candies. And it became the candy drawer, and it became like this thing where like everyone would just, I don't know, grab loose candies from it. And it has remained there every day since 1968.
That's extraordinary. Do you think some of the sweets in there have been, some of the rubbish ones have been in there since the 60s as well?
And there's probably like sweets with like traces of cocaine in them, yeah. When it was still legal to just put that in things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, like, so obviously, like, it's changed hands a lot over the years, the possession of the candy desk. And, like, we didn't even really know about it until some journalist referred to it in the 80s. And everyone was like, what? So, like, up until the 80s, it was hard candies. Until some guy called Steve Sims started saying, it's a fine assortment of sweets. It's not hard candies.
Sweets is quite a British term, though, isn't it?
I thought it was weird too, yeah. And then Rick Santorum, who you might remember as being
who
like...
sounds like he's Troy McClure.
It's always one of these things. Why are Republican senators always called insane things?
Yeah.
Like Mitt Romney.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Neither of those are names or indeed words.
It's like hitting randomize on a sim, isn't it? It's just like
it's just
syllables
noises.
That we recognize. In arrangements we don't recognize. So Rick Santorum, he came in and he started like getting the Hershey company to send him like Hershey's Kisses and stuff because he was apparently too fucking cheap to buy his own sweets.
I was going to say, was the person that owned the desk always responsible for the financial aspect of maintaining this trough of sweets?
Well, yes, up until Santorum fucked it. And like, he just started writing to the Hershey company being like, send us some stuff. And then they had to have this whole rule in because it's not like, that's technically accepting a gift of more than like $100 or whatever. So then Hershey's had to stop.
Also, Hershey's is vile.
Yes.
Disgusting. Like, it really makes sense that America is the way it is if that's their standard for chocolate, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's horrible.
Someone send them some dairy milk in an emergency package.
Yeah, it'll blow their fucking minds.
Did you guys like have that moment when you were a kid of like someone going to like an American to America and coming back with sweets and being like, yes. Oh my God, this is going to blow my mind. I've seen this on like Halloween episodes of Two of a Kind. And yeah. Now I'm going to like going crazy and then being like, oh, this is not good.
Yeah, because Hershey's genuinely tastes like sick. And I'm sure we've talked about it on the podcast before, but it has like an element in it that is the same element as you find in vomit.
Ew. Why? I literally was about to say it's toilet chocolate, but that is in fact true because you do also vomit into a toilet.
Yeah, if you're lucky.
If you're one of the lucky ones.
So an even grosser thing I found out. So the candy desk, it came to sort of more publication more recently. It's kind of been this like foible we heard about for a while, and like it pops up every now and then as being like, oh, a fun fact. And also there's like a rival candy desk that was set up in the 80s by the Democrats.
Wow.
But like everything the Democrats do, it was just kind of like nobody cared and they moved on.
Because the sweets were like simultaneously funding like healthcare or something. And they were like, no, fuck your shit sweets. Try to help people.
I bet you the Democrats have like barley sugars that you get at the pharmacy or something.
Yeah, they're going to have glamorous organic, sweet. Like no palm oil, all vegan, kind of, which obviously are all commendable things. But I'm sorry, they haven't made as much effort to taste as good yet.
Yeah.
I love how you're policing your tone for a candy door set up by Democrats that you will never see or eat from.
No, I can't be too careful, Caroline.
You can't be too careful. So the candy desk was one of these kind of foibles that people knew about and would occasionally crop up in the media as a kind of like fun fact. But everyone had sort of forgotten about it until very, very recently when the impeachment trial happened. Remember that?
Right. Yeah. The impeachment that didn't happen, but it nearly did.
I think, I know, shock, he got away with it.
Yeah, it got rejected by the Senate. Is that right?
Do you know what, lads? You could literally put a gun to my head and I couldn't tell you what happened there. But the good thing about that is all of our minor political worries of yesteryear have been swiped away for the main worry of whether or not we're going to die of flu. So that's really handy for us lesser informed people. But it came up in that because obviously all these senators were stuck in this room for hours and hours and hours. It was a really, really lengthy process. And the candy drawer got an absolute rollicking. Because you're not allowed to bring food into the Senate.
Oh.
You can only eat the food that's already there. And the only food that's there are sweets. You can't have tea or coffee. The only liquids that are allowed in the US Senate is water and milk.
What? Ooh. It's basically school.
It's basically school. It's a child's treehouse of a country. So are there mini fridges? Like, where's the milk staying cold? Are they literally having like room temperature milk and like decades old sweets? It's a disgusting image. And I found this little bit in a New York Times article and it made me disgusting. Senator Bill Cassidy, Republican of Louisiana, caught the attention of Roll Call, which wrote on Tuesday that he munched away on a candy bar during the impeachment with no attempt to hide his forbidden treat. The metallic wrapper glistened each time he raised the bar to his mouth while he took notes with his other hands. He ate fallen bits off his desk by pressing them into his finger and licking his finger. While the fucking Trump is being impeached, it's the most disgusting image I've ever heard.
Honest to God, this is a country where, like, if you break your toe, you might die because you can't afford, like... And then they're like, God forbid we bring any other food into the Senate of Doom.
it's so distressing on like a number of levels. And like, that's basically candy drawers. But once I got there, I went down this rabbit hole of like weird traditions in the White House. We all remember President John F. Kennedy, the famously one of the two cool presidents that America has had. He used to have like huge quantities of fags just lying around Air Force One, just boxes and boxes of cigarettes.
Oh,
nice. That was the 60s, wasn't
the
it?
The 60s, I know.
Do you know, that reminds me of, do you know one of the Olsons is married to like the ex-president of France?
Sarkozy's brother.
Sarkozy's
brother, yeah.
Yes. So, you know, like he's a giant and she's 2 foot 8.
Yeah.
Apparently, and obviously he's French and they love smoking. Apparently at their wedding, they had these incredibly gauche, like, giant buckets of like free fags lying around.
That sounds like the best wedding ever.
And the wedding was like obviously really lavish and really, you know, they'd spent thousands and thousands and thousands, and then like there was just these buckets of fags for everyone.
I think that's absolutely class. Because the thing about a wedding is there's always, basically there's only like 2 smokers per 100 people left anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
But like at a wedding, everybody wants a fag. Everybody wants to be outside with a smoker. So like you're really alleviating the smokers in your life from having to be, yeah. But anyway, so John F. Kennedy had cigarettes everywhere, but Ronald Reagan, he was like trying to do this health thing. So he took out the cigarettes and he replaced them with like bowls and bowls of jelly beans everywhere. And then after a while he tried to like, he made M&M's the like official sweet of the White House, and ever since then branded M&M's have existed all over the White House.
What's
it with like the White House on it?
Yeah, like I'm looking at a picture of them right now and it's like the yellow M&M with an American flag. Look, you know that weird expression the yellow M&M has, like he always looks like he just has come. You know?
Yes.
He's always got his half closed, like docile eyes, like he's just absolutely blown a load. Like he's just him on the cover of a box with the American flag and it's covered in stars and stripes. It's very weird to look at.
What the fuck?
Why? Why must the Americans brand everything with their own horrible images?
No, they're horrible paraphernalia. But do you know what we have a version of this too? Do you want to know what it is?
Oh, okay.
Oh, go on.
That's okay. Just in the interest of balance, I will also slag off our own government.
To be fair, ours is slightly, but not much cooler and extremely British. Tell me what it is.
Oh, I know this. Brown sauce.
No, that was another episode, Hannah.
Peanuts or pints or Guinness or something.
No, it's a parliamentary snuff box.
Oh,
for tobacco.
Yeah. The parliamentary snuff box is a wooden snuff box at the door of the House of Commons where snuff is stored for use of the members of Parliament. It originated after 1694 when smoking was banned in the House of Commons. So it's just been there ever since.
Do you think people use it still?
Have you ever actually had snuff?
Yes, it's horrible.
It's weird, yeah.
What is it?
It's like kind of a menthol tobacco thing that you just like
sniff it up your nose.
Yeah, you snort it.
Oh.
It's a little bit like taking like really bad cocaine. Like, oh, do you remember MCAT?
Yes.
It's a bit, it feels like that. That's what it feels like. It's a bit mintier. You get like a slight buzz off it.
And then you blow your nose in the morning and you're like, good God, what is that?
Yeah. It's mad that it was just like the official hobby of like old weird men for hundreds of years.
I think I'm going to get into snuff.
Get into snuff, sure.
So you've got all the time in the world right now.
Yeah. Try some new stuff. Try new things, you know? That's what everyone's saying.
Expand your horizons.
Exactly.
So, lads, that's pretty much Candy Desks. And
I loved that.
Thank you. I was fascinated by it too. I'm so glad that you were as into people keeping loose sweets in drawers as I am.
That is, yeah, just incredible.
And fuck it. I guess they all have coronavirus now from their loose sweets.
Of course.
Oh, what? I bet Trump doesn't like jelly beans or something, so he's immune.
No, I bet he loves, like, that's such a thing he'd be into.
Yeah, because I just really want him to get it because he doesn't drink. So the irony of him being struck down by something called Corona is just like, delicious.
It's so weird that he doesn't drink, isn't it? I always am struck really by that weird fact.
It doesn't make any sense, yeah.
Because I feel like, wow, you're doing all this sober, mate. You haven't even blacked out. Do you know what I mean? Pretend like you haven't done it.
He's so like, for somebody who's like, wants to be known for his womanizing, he's so like unsensory a person, do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
you can't imagine him like enjoying a good meal or enjoying a nice pint or enjoying a nice woman
pussy,
you know. Pussy. Yeah,
he grabs it, sure, but he doesn't know what to do with it once he's got it.
Not a clue. Like a dog with a handbag.
We now interrupt with an important announcement about the Women Who Code Mixer. Guys, I've just had an email from the Women Who Code Mixer.
Yeah, sure.
And it says that the Women Who Code Mixer has been postponed due to the coronavirus. We will still run it. at a later date, and then it says it has a little smiley face. And I think in the FAQs, it just says you can't get a refund.
Oh.
Those are expensive tickets.
Okay, well, guys, just like hang on to your tickets and we'll maybe do it if we don't die.
Yeah, but otherwise we've got your money.
Yes.
If you do die.
The thing is, I would have thought that the volume of white wine consumed at the Women Who Code mixers actually would count as alcohol gel.
No, it's all been sent to the NHS now.
Oh, I see. Fair enough.
Yeah, too late for that.
I've been sending the NHS white wine as well. I hope you all have at home.
A nice Chilean Sauvignon Blanc.
Oh, that's what the doctors need. Stay safe. So, Hannah, you're telling us about a colourful shampoo for this episode. Is that right?
Yeah, I remember shampoo.
Oh, yeah, back when we all used to wash our hair like every other day.
Now I just use it as, yeah, lube, I think it's now classed as.
Yeah, Pantone. So I decided to do Pantone to look into it because at the end of February, I stayed at a hotel, unthinkable.
Oh my God.
In Brussels. Unthinkable.
A hotel.
Selfish and irresponsible.
Absolutely.
So you went to a building where up to 600 people already were.
And where people had previously slept.
Apparently so. I mean, it feels like it's almost a blackout in my mind. It just feels like a different lifetime. But yes, I went on holiday to Belgium before everything went to shit and stayed at the Pantone Hotel. And yes, Pantone, as in those colour swatches. Do you guys know what I'm talking about when I say Pantone?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Colour of the year, once a year, and then we never hear from them again.
Yeah, they're quite like a hipster Christmas gift, aren't they? Like a Pantone
exactly.
Mug.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
They've got so much merch. They've got like mugs, notebooks, vases, water bottles, and a hotel, a casual hotel thrown in there.
Why does every cool brand have a hotel now?
Very weird.
I know. It doesn't make any sense. And basically the only thing that's Pantone about it is it just has colours everywhere. So each room has a different colour theme, and we were in the cheapest room. So can you guess what colour that was?
Brown?
Brown!
Oh my God.
It was brown.
That's incredible. Brown.
Yeah.
A certain shade of brown or just brown?
It was like a Pantone shade of brown, but it wasn't a special looking brown. It wasn't a golden brown. It was like a kind of, you know, dog shit brown.
That's very
really
shaming.
Said, yeah, you're
that's
paying
so shaming.
Like 30 euros a night to stay here. And we want you to remember that.
The poo room.
The poo room.
the beautiful simplicity of the joke, the poo room. Oh, poo's just a funny word.
So, yeah, obviously that I was just wondering, how did we get here? How did Pantone get here? What's happening? So I looked a little bit into the company, and the way that it was founded was actually, I mean, normally I might kind of skip over this bit, but it was actually quite interesting because it was founded as a printing company in the 50s by these two brothers who were advertising executives. And then in 1956, they hired this guy called Lawrence Herbert as a part-time employee. And he had just graduated uni with a degree in biology and chemistry. And then he'd gone to fight in Korea. Remember the US was involved in the war in Korea?
What?
Yeah, wow.
I forgot that one. Actually, Don Draper fought in Korea.
Oh, yeah. And then like his original identity died in Korea. And then he adopted Don Draper, right?
Yeah.
Sorry, Mad Men spoilers.
Oh, all I'm thinking about is how I really love Korean chicken and now I really want some.
They're the best at it. I don't know how they get it so right.
They really are.
Yeah. So this guy, Lawrence, yeah, he came back from Korea and he wanted to be a doctor. So he was like applying to medical school and stuff. And in the meantime, just decided to get this job at this printing company. And then he got really, really into it because he'd done chemistry. And so he was like, he quite enjoyed all the stuff with the ink. And he essentially took charge of the ink and printing part of it and completely turned it around. And he made that section of the company profitable while the rest of it was like 50 grand in debt.
Wow.
And then he bought this off them. He bought the company off these brothers and renamed it Pantone.
What a slick operator.
I know.
God. He runs colours like Koreans run chicken.
So, yeah, that was a turnaround for the books. obviously he then gave up his dreams to be a doctor and was like, no, I'm really into colours now. So that's one less doctor for the US.
Right now. It's a shame because they really need those.
Yeah.
A little bit.
No, it's all right. 2021 will be the great colour wars. And then he'll really come into his own.
So he invented the Pantone matching system, which is like all the swatches of colors. So you have like the color, and then underneath it you have like a white band with the kind of, you know, mesmerizing brown 369 or whatever it says. Mm-hmm. And the whole point of those chips is what they're called, is that they allow you to standardize color. So if you have like a label for your box of cereal and you send it to be printed at two different printers and one prints the color less bright than another, if they both end up in the same shop, the customers might think that one of them is like less fresh or isn't as good.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
Which was, because I was kind of thinking the whole time, like, does it really matter that much if like the color's a little bit off? But for stuff like that, it does. And I guess also like brands and colors are so connected as well. Like Coca-Cola, if it was a darker red, you'd be like, what the fuck?
Yeah, it's so true. Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. Because you'd be like, this is a new flavor. It's a cherry one. Yeah. They're bringing cherry back.
Yeah. God, cherry Coke is horrible, isn't it?
Oh, I'm a big fan of cherry Coke. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, you guys are monsters.
I also don't mind a vanilla Coke because it tastes a bit like drinking a candle.
It does. Yeah, I don't like vanilla Coke, but that is exactly it. And I've always wondered what the taste was.
Oh. It's like a real Yankee candle, like a real downstairs loo Yankee candle.
Yeah, downstairs loo, where it belongs, in the poo room.
In the poo room. Yeah.
In the poo room.
Alleviate your poo room.
I'm joking. The downstairs toilet in my parents' house actually is always really cold because the window's open, so you never poo in there.
Oh, yeah. I've definitely made a lot of Arctic poo rooms.
Also, when you go to a pub, the toilet is either so, so warm or so cold.
Oh my God. So cold? Like igloo.
It's always fucking freezing, or it's like on the boiler. You're pooing on the boiler.
So true. I would take a cold poo seat over a warm poo seat personally.
Oh yeah, well, because warm means that someone else might have been on it.
That's the thing, yeah.
Where were we?
Carry on. Pantone.
It's good to know that we can still go on huge tangents even when we can't actually see each other.
I know, it's nice.
Do you know what I would sometimes think of?
What?
This is only a 10-second tangent, but you know if like you sleep with someone after you've like been in a pub, which is, you know, frequent.
Frequent for some.
What if they, you know, if they like, if they put their face in your bum or like kiss the back of your thighs, it's like you're kissing the loo seat, and that pops into my head quite a lot.
Wow.
Oh,
yeah.
I'm not going to be able to not think of that now.
I know. So never kiss a boy's bum is what I'm trying to say.
Never kiss a boy's bum. Come on, Alex, you've eaten an ass in your life, haven't you?
Yeah, I know, but then I think of that and then halfway through with it, well, then I think, you know, anyways, can't stop now, it's impolite.
Well, I'm in it now.
But I'm thinking of the loo seat. Anyway, sorry, Hannah, carry on.
And so the whole thing about Pantone is it's just really precise about what each colour is and how much of each, because colours are obviously made up of like other colours. And it kind of, yeah, it's very precise about how much of each of them it goes in. So yeah, it's really clever. And they have technicians that work there that have to take an eye test every year, and they can differentiate colors. Like I saw this video on YouTube of them differentiating these colors that to normal people would look exactly the same. And this woman's like,
wow.
Yeah, you see how that one's a little bit more red, it's got more red in it. And the person filming is just like, absolutely not, no, they're the same color.
Wow, that's so interesting.
I know. And also in this video, they interviewed the people at the factory, and it said you can't have caffeine on the day of your test because it affects your capillaries in your eyes.
What?
Was that gross?
Oh my God.
What, so like the ability to see colour?
Yeah.
Is that why boys are really colourblind? Do they drink more tea and coffee than us?
First of all, what are both of those findings and where do they come from?
No, men men are way more likely, this is an actual fact, men are way more likely to be colorblind than women. And especially men find it, like on the whole, so much more difficult to tell the difference between green and blue. Think about how many times you've come downstairs in a blue dress and your dad's been like, oh, what a lovely green dress. And then you're
oh
like,
my God, yes.
Oh my God, you're right. By yeah. God, she's got it. And it's because they're, and you are right though, like men do drink too much tea.
But isn't that also a kind of Devil Wears Prada thing of being like, oh, I'm just wearing a blue jumper. And then someone comes along and is like,
oh, it's cerulean. Not lapis. Cerulean. But yeah, they do drink too much tea. I think it's because it all comes out of Sports Direct mugs.
Oh, yeah. Although we have to boycott them now.
Oh, shit.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
That's another thing.
That's another fun thing to put on the list.
Because remember, we've all got one and an umbrella and we don't know when we got it or who brought it into our homes.
Hmm.
Yeah.
So yeah, so basically that's how Pantone became really big in the design world by just being really good at colours.
But like why are they so hipstery? Is it just because graphic designers are hipsters?
Well, I think so. I was
yeah,
trying to look
it's like
into
it. Just a simple design, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think it is just that it's a really simple design and that they do that well, and then they took it and made it into like the first merch they made was the mugs in 2005. And I saw an interview with someone from the company who was saying, like, they worked out that the amount of designers, like professional designers that they could sell stuff to was about 7 or 8 million. And then They just basically thought, how can we make more money? Who can we sell stuff to? And so they decided that instead of just selling color swatches to designers, they needed to sell merch to people who were like interested in design. And it just absolutely catapulted them.
Yeah.
And it's smart, isn't it? Because everyone as well is like, everyone at heart is a bit like, oh, I could be a designer. Sure. Like,
that's so true.
Like, Caroline, your boyfriend Gavin is a graphic designer. Has he got like Pantone merch?
No, and he finds it vaguely embarrassing. But he's a little, you know, he's a little bit of a cool dude. Like, he's kind of like, he kind of wants to zag when everyone's zigging. And I think, like, at this point, it is the keep calm and carry on of men.
Yeah.
Pantone mugs.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's just an overexposure thing, isn't it?
I do think that there is a thing where everyone, it's become a quite cool job in the last sort of 10, 15 years. And yeah. I'm often like at parties with Gavin when they like, someone finds out he's a graphic designer and people start like, people do kind of an armchair graphic design thing where they're like, they want to have a bitch about like their least favorite fonts and their most favorite fonts. And he's a bit like, okay. So I imagine they're who the Pantone mugs are actually for.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, I think
poor
so.
Poor old Comic Sans taking a battering again.
Exactly. It's people who love having a go at Comic Sans. It's like, look, Comic Sans was invented for children's birthday parties and it serves that function well. Leave it alone. Yeah.
No? And mum's posting on Facebook about local community warnings.
Or people trying to soften their office request to get people to wash their own mugs.
Yes.
Like, oh, I don't want Karen to think I'm a bitch, so I'm going to put it in Comic Sans.
Yeah. Even though it has the C word in it.
Yeah. Yeah.
But if I write it in Comic Sans, it'll be fine.
The other thing I found out, which I thought was really odd, is that the merch is really big in Japan. Like, Japan spends more on the merch than it does on any other, like, Pantone stuff.
I know, but they're very cool, aren't they, in Japan?
I know, they are. And then there's some hospitals in Japan where they have, like, long-stay patients where the nurses and doctors will wear a different colour of scrubs each day of the week so that the patients can be like, oh, they're in blue, it must be Monday.
Aww.
Which is kind of sad and nice.
That's that, because do you think of colours when you think of days of the week? Because I do.
Really?
Yeah, like, immediately, like, in my head, every time someone says a day, a colour flashes up in my mind.
Wow. Do you have synesthesia?
No, I think a lot of people have it, but mine, I've realised, was based on the colour of the days in the Radio Times when I was a kid, so.
Wow.
Oh, that's cute.
That's nice, yeah. I want to end with the Pantone Colour of the Year, which they've been doing since, I think, 1999, maybe 2000.
Yeah, because this is announced every year, like Word of the Year, Oxford English Dictionary type thing.
Yeah, exactly. So every year they decide that there's one Pantone colour of the year, and it's not so much a trends forecast as like a reflection, they say, of what's taking place. And so they name the colour of the year before the year happens. So the colour for 2020 is classic blue, which is a shade reminiscent of the sky at dusk. But this is awful. Okay, so I read on the website, it's a colour that anticipates what's going to happen next. What's the future going to bring? And then it's
disease.
I know. It's talking about how the last time a blue was chosen, it was 1999, and they were kind of talking about Y2K and like, is the world going to implode? And then it says, the Pantone Colour Institute said it recognised similar feelings of instability gripping the world today. It settled on a shade that offers the reassurance, confidence and connection that people may be searching for in an uncertain global milieu. So ooh. did Pantone predict coronavirus?
Wow.
I think it might have done.
100%. This is who did it.
Yeah.
I don't know, because if they picked blue in 1999 and like the year famous for like the big disaster that we all thought was going to happen and never actually happened, like the millennium bug.
Yeah.
Like maybe coronavirus is also not a big deal, maybe?
It's a pretty big deal so far.
Pretty big deal so far. Okay, I'll throw that vague hope out the window.
Sorry. What do you think the colour will be for next year?
Poo again.
Poo brown. Poo brown.
Poo brown.
No, I think it'll be like a peachy yellow, like the sun rising again.
Oh, beautiful work.
Nice. Thank
you. Yes, I vote for that.
I wonder how hard it is to get a job at Pantone. Do you think you have to show that you have like a very small tattoo and a subscription to Monocle?
Yes. And you wear glasses without frames.
And like one of those like what like a Shibu Inu dog, you know?
Yeah.
Like
you only shop at
dogs.
Muji and you've thrown away all your socks.
And on Spare Room you call yourself creative.
Oh yes. Yeah. A creative space for you to relax in.
Exactly. Two creatives looking for a third creative.
Creative just replaced person or being alive.
Oh, so true.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promote for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So Alex, you're also taking a kind of design direction this episode by talking about some really lovely wallpaper.
Sorry, no, Hannah. My section is on William Wallace, not William Morris. Although the 13th century pioneer for Scottish independence was known to be great with interiors. So, you know, a slight link there. I'm doing William Wallace or Braveheart, as he is more commonly known these days. Faced by Mel Gibson in the 1995 Oscar-winning film of the same name.
Oscar-winning, wasn't it?
Yeah, Mel Gibson won Best Director for Braveheart.
He directed Braveheart?
He directed and starred in Braveheart, because one of the things I Googled today was like, why was Mel Gibson picked to play Braveheart? And it turns out, if you're doing the film, you can very much cast yourself.
He just wanted to ride horses, didn't he?
I think he did, yeah.
A noble goal, a noble goal.
Yeah, so I think he just wanted to, you know, be a barbarian.
Mm.
It was nominated for 10 Oscars.
No way.
And it won 5.
I can't remember that film being that good. I'm going to have to rewatch it.
It was all right, but it won 5 Oscars.
Wow. And that was before people like really cared about people being from the places they were representing, right?
Yeah, it won Best Director, Best Picture, and then the rest were all like, you know, Best Sound Editing and, you know, Best Catering on set or whatever it's called.
Best Craft Services.
Yeah. Aww. And it's kind of weird because it is a good story about William Wallace, which I'll go into in just a second, but it's quite an obscure thing to make a film of. Like, I don't know what internet hole Mel Gibson fell down.
Wait, was the William Wallace story not like a GCSE history thing before Mel Gibson put it to film?
Well, I never learnt about it.
Apart from the film, and also when I went to Scotland a few years ago, and I think we were sort of near the area where it all happened, and there was some kind of a castle.
Well, when I was reading about it, basically, William Wallace, I mean, it was a lot earlier than I thought as well. I mean, he was born in 1270. In my head, I was like, probably like 1680.
Like seriously, if someone asked me, I would have been like, I don't know, yeah, like Henry VIII time, maybe?
Yeah.
All our Scottish listeners are going to be absolutely appalled by this. Maybe they should just fast forward 10 minutes.
It's fine. I'm the biggest shame of us all because my dad and the rest of my family are Scottish and I should know this. I probably should know it. And I even do a bit in my set about, you know, me saying to my dad, I just want my freedom.
In general, though, any kind of like UK and Irish history that's like post the Celts and like the Normans and the Saxons, but pre Henry VIII, I'm just like question mark.
You know what I mean? Yeah, that's exactly what I was doing. So I was reading about him today. Essentially, I'm going to sort of really summarize it, but then just pick out a few of the more interesting points. So basically, right. So when William Wallace was kind of growing up, King Alexander III was the ruler of Scotland, okay? And everything was dandy. And then, of course, when William Wallace was 16 in 1286, King Alexander died. Do you want to know how? How does every king die if it's not in battle back in the day?
Dysentery.
Poisoning.
Nope. He fell off a horse.
Oh, what?
I mean, what a way to go after everything.
Just plonked off. That thing where like if you ever go to a riding stable and like the fucking the horse blows out its belly when you put the saddle on, so then you climb on and it just slides off.
Yeah. Basically that. So basically the king died because he fell off his horse. Also, while I was reading about all of this, right, I was thinking, especially in these times when, you know, everything we're learning about at the moment is like it's a national broadcast about everything, or you're going on Twitter and you're finding everything out, or like messages of hope and support and community are spreading via Instagram and God knows what platforms, etc. I was like, there must have been people where all this was like William Wallace was doing all of this for Scottish independence, and like people probably 10 miles away probably didn't even know the king had died. Do you know what I mean? Like,
I know, I always think about that.
He's like really going for it, and fair play, you know, he's fighting for the independence of his country, but 80% of his country probably absolutely none the wiser. Do you know what I mean?
Like, they must have had like some kind of messenger system though. Like they send a bunch of people out on horses and they have to disperse the information to this town, and then I guess so.
But surely, I mean,
they had some.
There'd be someone in the north doing the same and doing a completely opposite message, fake news. Do you know what I mean? It would be so easy. All you need is a horse, anyway. So the king dies is what I'm trying to say. Classic start to any film. Sorry, real life, yeah. Whatever. King dies. And then the heir to the throne, it doesn't say what happened to his daughter or son, but the heir to the throne was his granddaughter, who was called Margaret, and she was a child who was at the time living in Norway. Don't ask. I don't know what's going on.
What in the fuck was she doing out there?
Erasmus.
Shipped his heir out to Norway. Anyway, she was a kid. And in Norway, but then they were like, right, well, we've got to ship her back. The Scottish kind of parliament of the time were like, right, we'll take over for a couple of years. A bit like Oliver Cromwell, you know, just while Margaret grows up a bit. Then they shipped her back 4 years later. She died on the way.
No!
So that was her gone. And then obviously Scotland was about to go into civil war.
With the English?
No, like with each other, because there was no real sort of ruler. Do you know what I mean? Yeah, there was different clans and stuff like that. So obviously King Edward of England was invited in by Scottish nobility to arbitrate.
Oh.
What?
So, I mean, I know the Scots hate the English, and they should, because I want to say we, but my ancestors are Scottish. Like, they basically did very bad. The English are always bad. Any story, the English are bad. We went and killed loads of people in Scotland, and it was horrible. But in the first instance, the Scots did invite him in.
That's so weird, like as like an ombudsman.
Yeah, kind of like an adjudicator. Like, oh, I know who will do this fairly. The guy from a slightly bigger country that's next door and borders us. Like, what could possibly go wrong?
So strange.
Yeah, very strange. So obviously, all the shit kicked off after that, because King Edward was then like, well, we own you. But then, a year later, guess who starts coming to power? It's William Wallace, guys.
It's William Wallace. I was waiting for him to show up.
Who at the time, because you've got Mel Gibson in your head, haven't you?
Yes,
I do.
He was 27, the actual one, William Wallace.
He probably had like 3 grandkids at that point, though, didn't he?
I know.
I mean, he's 27 in like, what, 1210 or something, whatever the fuck you
1297, and he's 27. And in a sort of cool sort of vengeance way, his father was slain by the English in a skirmish with English troops in 1286. So when the king died, there was a bit of a kerfuffle, as I believe they call it, some minor fighting, and his dad was killed by the English, so he was ruminating for 10 years ready.
Wow. 10 years gathering up the strength to go and knock someone about.
Go and fuck shit up, basically, yeah. So then he William Wallace started to go completely mad, basically, and had some success, hence him being known even today. And his big first sort of outing was he rebelled against Edward I by killing the High Sheriff of Lanark. So basically, people were like,
"Where that sheriff used to be a thing."
Yeah, I know. Yeah. In the UK,
and it wasn't a fox.
I'm afraid it wasn't a fox, although there is a picture here of Edward I, and he is actually a babe.
Really?
He looks like a sort of sexy Sean Walsh, the comedian.
Oh, I could slice out some of that, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. You could definitely take a bit of that, yeah. And then he also beat the English at the Battle of Stirling Bridge, and it was all going really well.
So did he have, he must have had like his own army or his own group of...
Yeah, so he was gathering support basically, because people were like, oh, the English are trying to rule us and take over, even though we invited them in. And then he was sort of, then William Wallace was like, no, hang on, why should we give our stuff to them? I think it was vastly more complex than that.
I'm still confused about it. So like, they asked the English to come in and adjudicate a transfer of power.
A successor, yes.
Yeah, because of... Your one being in Norway.
And, yes, and dying on the way.
on the way, classic. And then the English were like, well, we're here already. We're very good at paperwork. We'll just stay. And also you'll be our inferiors forever. And they were like, hang on.
Yes, and then I think they began killing anyone that said no, basically.
Right.
So, naughty English.
Mm. Well, like, I mean, if you invite a snake to tea, like, you can't get mad at it for inviting you, you know?
I was all ready to, like, you know, slag off the English and be aligned to my ancestors. And then it was like, you invited him in. Oh, come on. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Have they not seen any films? The English are always the bad guys.
Yeah, I should have known that.
Yeah, so essentially then people, Wallace started gathering supporters who were like, yeah, of course we should uninvite him, very much so, from tea. Uninvite the snake from tea.
Firmly uninvite him.
Yeah, exactly. And he was only actually... From when he started his rebellion back in the day, I think this is quite long for like late 12th century, he managed to evade the English for 8 years, considering there was probably about one man and his dog in Scotland at the time. And he was making quite the scene.
See, I always think of stuff like this, where especially when you talk about like Jack the Ripper and stuff, and it's like, oh, he's the killer that went evaded for years and like we never got to find out who he was. It's like,
yeah,
because they didn't have photography or like fingerprinting.
Yeah, there's no photography, no DNA testing.
Oh yeah, these days he'd be caught red-handed.
Just jumped out a window, done.
Yeah,
like, he'd have his GPS on by accident these days.
Totally. Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
I have no sympathy for any murderers who got caught before 1950. Do you know what I mean? You should
agreed.
Be able to get away with this.
Yes. you're a complete idiot if you were caught before yeah. then.
Now getting away with murder is absolute like hard mode. Do you know
yeah.
what I mean?
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
everything you do leaves a blueprint everywhere, and it's just, you know, it's too hard. That's why no one murders anymore.
Speaking of hard, I'm about to get you extremely aroused.
Oh, love it. I'm already completely nude, so.
Because, I mean.
I actually am. I'm actually nude from the waist down.
From the waist down?
I know, I'm such a pervert.
Why from the waist down? Have you had some afternoon delight?
No, I just I was just get you know when you're working from home all day and your crotch feels a bit cramped, so you just shed off layers.
Yeah, fair play.
And so I'm just kicking my legs like Mr. Burns on the phone on my bed. Stop doing this podcast.
It's quarantine for society, but it's yeah. the opposite for you.
Exactly. I'm airing it out. Anyway, go on, please.
No, not at all. So basically, he eventually, so for 8 years, he's getting this, he's sort of leading this uprising. They're starting to beat the English at battles. Obviously, the English are shiting themselves. And then on the 5th of August in 1305, so they've had the Millennium Bug for that year, a Scottish knight who was secretly loyal to Edward turned William Wallace over to English soldiers.
Oh.
Pricks.
So he had his very own Judas, basically.
Oh, no.
Judas, Judas.
Yes. Basically, I think the reason that William Wallace became a name and was sort of seen as a hero was because even when he was caught, and this is what's going to make you wet for him, even when he was caught, he was taken to Westminster Hall, he was tried for treason and atrocities against civilian in war, sparing neither age nor sex, monk nor nun. So basically, William Wallace killed everyone. He didn't give a
shit. Killed indiscriminately.
Yeah. He was a killing machine.
That's not very horny.
Wait, that's not the horny bit.
Okay.
But then when they said, you know, that William Wallace, we charge you with treason. How do you respond? He said, I could not be a traitor to Edward, for I was never his subject.
Oh, very good.
And then they killed him. Yeah.
That is quite horny.
That's corny, isn't it?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? But did you know that he was hung, drawn and quartered?
Oh.
It sounds right. I've definitely heard that phrase before.
It's honestly the most, I mean, you say the phrase and you sort of think about it, but it is the most, the maddest shit. Again, remember, there's no news service, there's no photography, nothing. So it seems extremely like weird.
You're so right. Yeah.
To go to this length. To sort of make an example of him, basically, like, don't stand up to us.
A real day's work, you know?
Yeah, like, taken to the Tower of London, stripped naked, dragged through the city at the heels of a horse, hung, drawn and quartered. So he was hung, but then... He was hung, ladies. But then while he was still alive, he had his balls chopped off and his bowels taken out and burned before him, then beheaded, then cut into four parts, then they dipped his head in tar and put it on a pike on London Bridge.
Wow. Yeah.
Why were they really loved torture in the past in a way that's never properly explained.
Do you think though, because like Caroline, you were saying like, oh, they didn't have like photography or anything, so why bother doing that? Do you think it's almost that having like a horrible description of something that happens to someone is more impactful than saying like, yeah, we just killed them?
Yeah, maybe it's like word of mouth.
Yeah, I think you're totally right, actually. I think that must be the purpose of it.
Because they didn't have like a photo of someone hanging to be like,
yeah,
look, this is horrible.
Yeah.
So instead they'll be like, well, we ripped his guts out. And that really makes you kind of cringe.
Yeah, it makes you really think twice.
I bet the locals in, you know, Tower Bridge and London Bridge were like, oh, Jesus, have you seen your man there? Do you know what I mean? Like, fine.
Yeah, 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 exactly. And at what point did he turn into Mel Gibson? And also, to what extent is Mel Gibson bad? He's quite bad, isn't he?
He's extremely bad, yeah.
Oh, Mel Gibson is bad because he did fight for Scottish independence on screen, but now he has turned his efforts to anti-Semitism.
Yeah.
So, no.
But also, can I just say that the producer
turned his efforts.
the producer of Braveheart was called Alan Ladd, which is just my favourite name ever.
Nice. Yeah, Alan Ladd. He's like a guy, right? He was like a famous movie star. Alan. He, yeah, my dad is like obsessed with Alan Ladd.
Oh,
it's a thing.
That's so weird. The Alan lad I'm talking about was an industry exec and producer, but he is the son of the actor Alan Ladd, who I'm assuming you're talking about.
Yes, he was the star of the movie Shane, which my brother was named after.
Wow.
Oh. There you go. A nice
what a lovely toy. Connection.
Yeah. Yes, he starred particularly in westerns such as Shane, 1953, yes. and in film noir.
Yeah.
So basically, Alan Ladd's son, also named Alan Ladd, was the producer of Braveheart.
Oh, wow. What a good
fact. There you go.
I can't wait to text my dad that.
I just also can't believe how well Braveheart did at the cinema. Like, it was a simpler time, you know?
I'm going to have to rewatch it, like, tonight. Got time on my hands.
Do you know the link to me deciding to do this today was hearing Nicola Sturgeon give a rousing speech?
Oh, man. They are good at it, like.
She's so good.
And I thought, oh, I wonder, I can't do Nicola Sturgeon. But then I was like, hang on, William Wallace. She is the modern day William Wallace. So.
Oh, she so is. God bless yeah. Nicola Sturgeon.
God love her, you know. And thank you, Mel Gibson, for your efforts in previous life to show freedom fighters before you became.
Yeah, I mean, your cells are placed every 7 years, don't they? So.
Yes, exactly. So it wasn't really the same.
It's a new Mel Gibson. It's an old Mel Gibson, you know.
It wasn't the same Mel Gibson, exactly. Okay, so ladies, this week we won't be doing the smart lesson because, as Britain has proved recently, we are not very smart and we don't take heed of anything. So.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. Maybe next week the smart lesson could be downloadable from home and could really interfere with your workload while you try and help your child to fill in all the quadratic equations.
Yes, exactly.
I've been hearing a lot about how much of a nightmare that is.
Yeah, oh gosh, yes. I've given my child away, yeah.
And in the meantime, if you need any smart lessons or advice on what to do during the coronavirus, just go online and literally look at absolutely anyone who seems to know
yes.
what to do. So many people whose advice I wouldn't take over a fucking Pret sandwich suddenly have the answer to how we should get out of this. And it's like, maybe sit down, maybe.
One of my handy tips is to go on to one of your mum or dad's friends on Facebook and see what they've got to say.
Oh, yeah. Moira will have the answer.
She knows. She knows.
She knows.
Thank you, Moira.
So that's it for this week and our first remote recording. I feel like it was okay.
It was certainly okay.
It certainly happened.
If you enjoyed listening to this episode, you can hear more by searching School for Dumb Women on your favourite podcast app and following us on the usual social media platforms at Dumb Women Pod. You can also listen to us every other Thursday at 6 p.m. on Soho Radio.
Woo!
Thanks to Gavin Day for our logo, Harry Harris for our jingles, and Soho Radio Studios for helping us with the remote recording.
Yes.
Stay safe and stay dumb.
Bye.
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 Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.